Right, so some people, some artists after him, because this was back in like the 1920s, so after him, you know, this became like a very famous work of art. So some artists after him, they kind of got the same idea. They're like, oh, okay, so anything I want to pose as beautiful, that's what's going to be beautiful. So one guy, it's funny, they were displaying this work of art, and he had a sledgehammer in his hand, and he was going to chip off a piece of that urinal. And they asked him, why are you doing that? He said, well, this act of mine is a piece of art, because after all, art is what I want to make it to be. So as I'm doing this thing, this itself has beauty, and it's a work of art, in my understanding. Now, you might be thinking, like, huh? Like, what's going on here? Like, is there no standard? Right? What are these people thinking? But that's the way the artists are portraying art and beauty. And that has reflections on us as well, too. Yeah, you have the right to cover up in front of non-mahrams, and we're not going to say anything about it. If you understand that to be beautiful, then that's your prerogative. This is what people are saying. But if I choose not to, then because I think of beauty in a different way, then I should have the right to do so as well. Do you see how it's the same type of individualistic thinking, humanistic thinking that's spreading even into the way that some people understand the instructions of the religion? Please say salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now, our response to this is very simple. Okay, our response to this is that, look at, you think that everyone has their own understanding of what's beauty. Actually, you're wrong. What's going on here is that everyone has a certain goal that they're trying to get out of understanding beauty. And we talked about this yesterday. Right? Some people, their goal in life is to please themselves. Anything that makes them happy as an individual without considering anybody else, whatever pleases and tickles their fancy, whatever they find attractive at a lustful level, whatever that is, that's what is beautiful. So that's their yardstick for determining what's beauty and not beauty. But our yardstick is something which is far greater than that. We're taking the source of all beauty and making him be the yardstick. All the beauty that anybody ever perceives, it comes from a source after all. And we're taking that source to be the measure and the criterion for what's beautiful and not beautiful. God, the Prophet, his Ahlul Bayt, those individuals that he sent to tell us what's beautiful and what's not beautiful. You think that you are bold enough to say that you're capable of knowing what's beautiful and what's not beautiful. That means that you're measuring yourself up against God and you're saying that you have a better priority and better prerogative to do so. Well, we're choosing a better option, a safer option, a more knowledgeable option. Because we have a goal in life as well. Our goal in life isn't just to do things that please our lower selves. We have a higher purpose in mind. We're trying to make progress. We're trying to move somewhere. We have a limited time in our lives. We want to make something out of it. So we need to find out what is the best path that I can take and where does beauty truly lie. Now, the discussion now, I want to take it into a more specific direction. This idea of beauty and attraction is used in order to convey messages to people. Like, what after all is a movie or a story or music? Right? At the end of the day, what they're trying to do is they're trying to convey something to people. And there's different ways of conveying things to people, right? Like, for example, I can be here, I can give a lecture about a topic, like the concept of beauty in Islam. Okay, fine. You know, you're listening in the audience, some of you are taking notes, some of you are taking mental notes, right? And Some of it's coming in and sinking in, inshallah, will be a source of reflection for the future. Alhamdulillah. That's one way of conveying information, but there's other ways as well. You can take ideas and you can put them in different forms, and this has always happened throughout history. You look at stories, right? Why is it that people have told stories? They could have just said, you know, a story usually is there to convey a moral, right? A fable, these moral stories or the fables of the past, right? They were there to convey a moral teaching. They could have just forgotten the story and just said, hey, okay, you know what? You have to be a good person and don't steal from other people. But they knew that people take something more from a story than they would if you were to just tell them that thing. And it's the same way today. In today's world, right? If people want to really convey a message, they don't just say it, right? They use different techniques, movies, images, music, other ways to, you know, social media, to penetrate the mind and the heart. One of our maraji, contemporary maraji, he has a very interesting and very useful analysis of the arts. And by the arts, I mean all these types of forms of communication and media, like movies and music and art forms and pictures and all that type of thing. And before I quote you what he said, I just want to make a comment that sometimes we think of our maraji as being focused on some issues that are kind of, you know, not that relevant to what's happening in our daily lives. Yeah, maraji cover things like, you know, how much water do you need to use in order to make yourself tahir, and for example, what are the rules of if you have to break your fast, and these type of things. Which is true, alhamdulillah, they cover those issues. But the same way that Islam is a comprehensive religion that covers all aspects of our lives, the same way that our ulama also have specialities, and some of them cover even these parts of our lives as well too, like what's happening in media. Listen to what he has to say. He says that, I'm translating, he says that art is a form of expression. It's a form of conveying. However, it is different from other forms of expression. Now, how is it different from other forms of expression? He says, number one, that it is the most clear, it's the clearest way of expressing something to others. Number two, it's the most precise way to express things to others. And number three, it's the way, it's if you want the thing to that you're conveying to stick around the longest, to stay around the longest, art is the best and form for doing that as well too. So it's the most clear, it's the clearest, it is the most precise, and it's that which is gonna stick around for the longest as well too. Now, this is very significant, very important for us. You look at the Quran, Allah makes use of this concept. Allah doesn't just tell us, okay, this is the right and this is wrong. So many times He uses parables. He strikes a likeness to different things. And He uses stories and different expressions like oaths in order to convey the same points that He could have said in a different way. One of my favorite examples for this is the story of Nabi Yusuf alayhi salam and what took place between him and the wife of the Aziz of Egypt. You know the story, right? It's a story of a young man who is at the height of his youthfulness, right, and he's being presented an opportunity to fill with temptation and an opportunity to exercise lust. And he's being told to do so by his superior, and he's being threatened if he doesn't do so. And Allah describes what takes place in the form of the story. Allah tells us the incident that takes place. Let me just quote you the verse here, just to, I know you've heard this before, but it will help our discussion. This is from Surah Yusuf, A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. وَرَاوَدَتْهُ الَّتِي هُوَ فِي بَيْتِهَا وغلقت الأبواب وقالت هيت لك قال معاذ الله إنه ربي أحسن مثواي إنه لا يفلح الظالمون. The woman in whose house he was in solicited him. She offered herself to him. She closed and locked the doors and said, come to me. He said, God forbid. Indeed, he is my Lord. He has given me a good abode, and the wrongdoers are not successful. Now here, I'm up on stage. I just read you the Arabic of this verse right here. The Quran, historically speaking, has been something that has been read with voice, right? Like you've heard different recitations, like the brother Muhammad, mashallah, he recited the Quran with voice, and even our imams, alayhi wasalam, I mean, we're taking these instructions from the imams, they would recite, and the Prophet, they would recite the Quran with melodious tones and mournful tones. Just as a side note on this particular verse, I just want to share something with you. I remember one of my teachers once was talking about this idea of being able to express things in art forms. And he said that this, he was mentioning this verse in particular. And he said that in today's world, unfortunately, like a lot of the new qurra of the Quran, the new reciters of the Quran, they are looking to make the Quran sound melodious, and their emphasis is on that, which is how can they make their voices sound really nice. But he said that in the past, it used to be the case, and even now to a certain extent, but it's not as strong as it was before. He said in the past, it used to be the case that the reciters would look at the message that was being conveyed, and they would make their tone appropriate to that message. Okay, and then this teacher of mine, it was amazing. It was one of the most memorable classes that I've ever had in the Hawza. He says, let me show you what I mean. And then he opens up a Quran, and then he starts to recite this verse according to the tune of this one famous reciter by the name of Mustafa Ismail. And it was profound. You know, and we had no idea, the class had no idea that our teacher could even recite in a nice voice, let alone with that type of beauty. And we saw what he meant. He was saying, وَرَاوَدَتْهُ الَّتِي هُوَ فِي بَيْتِهِ, with that type of voice, and it was like powerful. It would like be the type of thing that makes your hair stand on end. Now anyhow, here, it could be the case that Allah would just tell us, you know what, as a believer, as my servant, you should protect yourself, and you should not, you should, especially when it comes to the opposite gender, you should hold yourself with a special conduct and be careful. But Allah uses a story. And now we're into that story, right? What's going to happen here? What's going to, she's out, the doors are locked. What can he possibly do? وَلَقَدْ هَمَّتْ بِهِ وَهَمَّ بِهَا لَوْلَا أَرَّآ بُرْهَانَ رَبِّهِ. She certainly made for him, and he would have made for her too, had it not been the case that he saw the proof of his Lord. And he turns to God in that situation. And God shows him a way out. Eventually, this same young man who is a slave of that household, he becomes the king. He becomes the mighty one in the land, right? He practices taqwa, and Allah rewards him by raising him to the highest station of the land. And that woman who used to be in the highest position, she becomes the object of ridicule among her peers for what she did. Now imagine that Allah is able to convey all that in the form of a story. It's very powerful, isn't it? You see, brothers and sisters, this idea of beauty and attraction and being able to convey messages by appealing to our attraction to beauty is something which is very important. And that's why one of the things that we Muslims need to, as a side note, we need to really take seriously is the idea of producing Islamic media. I don't mean just like media where you just slap on like a few bismillahs and, you know, make the characters say salamun alaikum to each other, and then you do the same type of stuff, right, with maybe a scarf or two. No, I mean real Islamic themes from ground up being conveyed in the form of media. It's something that we really need to improve and work on. Alhamdulillah, there is some work being done, and many of you have seen the likes of the movies of Maryam salamullahi alayha and Mukhtar and Nabi Yusuf alayhi salam. There's a lot of good that are in these, inshallah there'll be more in the future. Please say salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now, the summary of what we said until now is that we are attracted to beauty, and this attraction can be used to convey a message in a way that, by using art forms, in a way that cannot be conveyed using other forms of expression. And there's positive forms of that, for example, the Quranic stories, but it can be exploited as well in order to convey negative themes. And this is what happens today in the form of movies and music and these type of things. Oftentimes, the same attraction that we have for beauty is being exploited by people who want to convey themes which are not, in reality, beauty. The Quran teaches us this concept. The Quran tells us everything. It tells us how to live our life. It tells us how we can be tricked in life as well, too. The Quran tells us, look it, you have an enemy in this world, which is the shaitan and all of those who operate and work towards his cause. The Quran tells us that take him as your enemy. He's an enemy for you. فَاتَّخِذُوهُ عَدُوًا. Take him as an enemy. Treat him like an enemy. And then the Quran tells us what sort of techniques the shaitan uses in order to make us fall, to distract us from going towards our goal of getting to, of moving towards that absolute beauty who is God. One of the techniques of the shaitan that the Quran tells us he employs is something called tazyin. Tazyin comes from the word zina. Zina is something which is attractive. You put, for example, a beautiful pendant on, a beautiful pin on. Why do you do that? Because you want to attract somebody to yourself. Tazyin is the act of adornment and attraction. The shaitan makes use of our attraction to beauty, and he presents things as beautiful that are not in reality beautiful, but we get attracted to them. And this is what we need to be careful about. Because, as I mentioned last night, so many times, the reason why we find believers sometimes addicted to things like music or certain types of movies or whatever it is, pornography in some cases, is because they've been duped by the shaitan. They're thinking that this is actually beautiful, while in reality, it's not beautiful. And if we only were to stop to think about it and ask ourselves, how is this taking us towards our goal in life, we'd realize that, wait a minute, this has nothing in it, there's nothing in it for me. There's nothing beneficial. It's a trick of the shaitan. I think it's beautiful, but if I only were to think about it, then I would be able to open up my eyes again and see it for what it actually is. I want to end with another story from the Quran. Tonight's, alhamdulillah, it's a night of Quran, a night of stories from the Quran. And this is a story of a woman who, in the Quran, who undergoes a revolution of the self. So I thought it would be appropriate to share with you. And there's a lot of lessons that we can learn that's related to our topic. The name of this woman does not appear in the Quran, but according to hadith, her name is Bilqis. And she was a woman who lived at the time of the Prophet Solomon, Suleiman alayhi salam, and she was a queen. She had a mighty kingdom or queendom of her own, and she had a great throne as well too. She was in charge, and she had a lot of stuff as well. According to the Quran, utiyat min kulli shay, she had some of everything. Everything was at her fingertips. Nothing was lacking. But her problem was that she and her people used to worship the sun. They had taken a false god. The sun to them was something that was the object of ultimate beauty and therefore ultimate worship as well. So they used to worship it. And they were quite happy with what they used to do as well too. They're like, hey, we got everything set. You know, we got everything, right? Everything at our fingertips. We got our God as well too that we're worshiping. And we think we're making progress towards him as well too. The Quran describes these people. What happens is that Nabi Sulaiman sends his bird, who the miracle, Nabi Sulaiman could speak with birds, and the bird goes and reports on what he sees in this kingdom. He says, "Inni wajadtu imra'atan tamlikuhum wa utiyat min kulli shay'in wa laha 'arshun 'azim." I saw a woman ruling over these people, and she was given everything, and she had a mighty throne. وَجَدْتُهَا وَقَوْمَهَا يَسْجُدُونَ لِلشَّمْسِ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ. They worshipped, they used to prostrate to the sun instead of Allah. Now this is the relevant part here. Look at what shaitan does. وَزَيَّنَ لَهُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ أَعْمَالَهُمْ. Shaitan caused everything that they were doing to seem attractive to them. They were impressed with their course of life. فَصَدَّهُمْ عَنِ السَّبِيلِ. The result of that is they were blocked from the true path. فَهُمْ لَا يَهْتَدُونَ. They were not able to accept the guidance of God. Brothers and sisters, so many of us would love to be closer to Allah. So many of us would love to be closer to the Imam of our time. How many of us wouldn't give up everything to be able to be in the company of the Imam of our time? But brothers and sisters, the problem isn't it's not the case that they don't want us to have them. The problem is that we are preventing ourselves from accepting their guidance. See this word here, فَهُمْ لَا يَهْتَدُونَ. Because of being blocked from the true path, because of the shaitan making things seem beautiful to them, which aren't actually beautiful, they're blocked from the path. They can't accept the guidance. It's like rain is flowing down, right? If I take a big bucket outside and rain is coming down, I can fill that bucket. But if my bucket is upside down, then nothing's going to go in. Because of them worshiping this false god, they can't take anything in. So what happens? It's an interesting story. Eventually, Nabi Sulaiman conquers them and takes them as prisoner, meaning that his people take them as prisoner, and with all of respect, the queen and her people are taken to the kingdom of Sulaiman for a meeting. Now, according to hadith, Nabi Sulaiman did not want to fight them militarily. He wanted to see if he could bring them along the path of Tawheed. He wanted them to turn their bucket right side up. He wanted them to be able to accept that guidance that was waiting for them. So what he does is he devises different schemes. He causes her throne to be brought from her land to his land. And when she sees it, she's astounded that Nabi Sulaiman could cause such a thing to happen. And he builds a palace where the floor of that palace is made out of glass, but it's made in a way that it seems like it's a stream of water. And as she is about to walk on that glass, she thinks that she's going to walk into water. So she raises her clothing a little bit to see, because you know when you normally naturally would do if you're going to step into water. And at that point, he tells her that, wait a minute, this is just glass here. It's not water. It's not what you think. And at this point, after she sees these different things, then a transformation takes place, a revolution takes place. This same lady who used to be happy and content and impressed by those things that she got by worshiping the sun, she realized that, wait a minute, what she had was actually not all that much. There was something better out there. By thinking a little bit, by spending time in the company of the wali of Allah, Nabi Sulaiman, she was able to realize the falseness, the falsehood of her ways. And what does she say? She says that, قَالَتْ رَبِّ إِنِّي ظَلَمْتُ نَفْسِي. I've wronged myself. All this time I was marching along in my life thinking that, hey, I'm actually going somewhere. But after all, what kind of goal is the sun? The sun is something that comes, does its job, and then sets again. It's operating according to certain rules. That's something which is inferior. The sun has been made to serve humanity, to help us. We have to aim for something higher. So she gets away from that. She spends time in the company of the Prophet and she sees the wrong of her ways. There's something better out there. Inni dhalamtu nafsi wa aslamtu ma'a Sulaiman lillahi rabbil alameen. And I submit with Nabi Sulaiman to Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Brothers and sisters, those pop stars, their music, the movies that only take us away from God, those video games that we spend hours and hours on and they don't take us anywhere towards becoming a better person and towards God and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Those music videos which totally mess up our minds and totally change in our minds what's right and what's wrong. Why is it that we spend so much time on these things? Isn't it time that we realize that they're not taking us in that direction that we were created for? And we've been taken for a ride by the shaitan, and he's making things seem beautiful to us that actually are nothing but ugliness. May Allah help us to understand the truth and to act upon it. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.